Welcome to the Teaching Space Podcast, coming to you from Guernsey in the Channel Islands. Hello and welcome to the Teaching Space Podcast. It's Martine here. Thank you so much for joining me. Today I have an interview for you and I'm really looking forward to sharing Palm and her knowledge with you today. So Palm, rather than me do the introduction, I'm going to hand over straight to you and ask you to introduce yourself to the listeners.
Hi, thanks Martine. So my name is Palm Plummer. Some of you may have heard of me with my connection to Women Ed, where I'm a global strategic leader of the charitable organisation. I guess that's kind of where we're heading. But it's an organisation that promotes leadership for women, so aspiring and current leaders, and connecting them to each other. I'm also a teacher. I've been teaching for 23 years now, which does feel like a lifetime at points. and at present, I teach at Victoria College, Jersey, but I previously worked at the Sixth Form Centre in Guernsey. So I'm familiar with Guernsey, very much so.
You're familiar with Guernsey and island life and all the fun that brings.
Absolutely, yes. It's a beautiful island as well, Guernsey. It is.
I know I'm biased, but...
Yeah, don't let anyone in Jersey hear me say that, by the way.
Yes, there's a very predictable rivalry, as listeners can imagine, between Guernsey and Jersey. So it's really nice to have a fellow islander on the show and also a teacher and somebody who is so involved in Women Ed. And we're going to get the opportunity to talk about Women Ed towards the end of the episode in a bit more detail. So if anyone's listening who is interested in Women Ed, then there'll be a bit on that later on. But our primary focus of today's episode is teacher well-being, and primarily the reason why it's not where we think it should be right now. It feels like it's at an all-time low. So Palm, over to you. Why do you think that is?
Well, COVID has had a significant impact on teacher well-being over the past year. I'm not sure about you, Marty. I'm sure you feel the same, and many of our listeners would probably feel the same about this, but I know that I feel like I've been working almost two jobs over lockdown. And since then, we've been on this heightened state of stress and anxiety. It's like you're waiting for the next thing to happen. And I think one of the things with teaching is that teaching, it will take over your life if you allow it to. It's one of those jobs that exponentially fills the gaps. And when it's a job like that, that you have to give so much of yourself to, the capacity to do anything else beyond that is incredibly difficult. And with COVID, particularly during lockdown, and especially for women, and this has been well documented, the dual role of being a mother, a carer, a wife, etc., and juggling that with teaching has challenged women in lots of ways. So I think equally within school there have been additional pressures, you know, the adjustments to things like wearing masks, for example, or shields, having to ensure, you know, distance from the students, which has completely challenged the way teachers work. You know, this isn't what we signed up for as teachers. And I think all of that has had a significant impact on well-being.
I completely agree with you in terms of the impact of COVID. And also one thing that occurs to me is the effect it's had on our boundaries, our personal and professional boundaries, in the sense that for some people, myself in particular, I've been working from home as much as I possibly can, which has been great in one way because it's convenient and it means that I'm safe in that respect, as are my students. However, you are working in your home. So there is a real lack of boundaries between when is work time, when is home time, when you switch off. It's so much more difficult when you're working in the home environment. That's certainly something I found.
Yeah, completely. I couldn't agree more. When I just found that I my work day expanded exponentially, partly to accommodate other people's families as well. So one example of that was that we were meeting in the evenings. So instead of meeting during daytime, which is what you would do ordinarily in a school day, we were having to arrange our meetings for when after the children went to bed. So our work day suddenly expanded till about 9:30, just simply because we were having later and later meetings that were essential because of all the changes that were going on. So for me personally, I know that that challenge has definitely been there, but I know that others have found that as well, that, you know, certainly within the Twitter community, people have been very vocal about the impact that their work-life balance has experienced as a result of lockdown. And there's a lot of frazzled teachers out there.
That's very true. I think that you mentioned just before also kind of making the adjustment to teaching online, which a lot of teachers have had to do, perhaps teachers who wouldn't have been terribly confident with tech previously. There was a real sense of, oh my goodness, I have to learn how to use all of the technology all of the time, and I have to do it now, and I have to be perfect at it. And that pressure that we exert upon ourselves, as well as having it exerted externally as well, is kind of major, isn't it?
It is, completely. I think teachers are the worst for that. We do put pressure on ourselves. We are perfectionists. I'm sure we all know teachers who would rather do something themselves than delegate it, just simply because, you know, we're such perfectionists.
I'm nodding vigorously here.
But I do think that we have found it difficult because we want to be experts within our classrooms. And having to suddenly adapt. And I think certainly for teachers who have been in the profession for a long time and have felt very, very comfortable, you know, they've been in their comfort zones for a long time and not necessarily had to adapt hugely to changes that have come along within the classroom, to suddenly have to adapt to the new world of remote learning has been incredibly difficult for them. And I think that impact has been felt right across the profession, for sure.
I've certainly seen on Twitter, there's lots of chat about the pressure that teachers are under at the moment. What's your take on that? Have you seen any conversation going on?
Yeah, absolutely. I think yesterday, someone tweeted about juggling work and remote learning with their children and the unseen pressure of the additional cooking, the cleaning, the making sure that the children are fine, as well as looking after your own students. And one of the things, you know, as teachers, we have that duty of care for our students, that when they are with us, we are in loco parentis. And those boundaries have slightly shifted because we have our own children to be concerned about, those with children. They're juggling that as well. So it's, the responses to that thread were, there were so many varied voices responding and saying that they were really struggling with that balance. And I think, you know, we can't underestimate the impact that this pandemic has had on people who are living alone as well. Because equally, as well as juggling all of this, those that live alone are struggling with the solitude of this. So, you know, all of these pressures, no matter what your situation has been, I think that the pandemic has added a whole other layer of stress on top of an already stressed profession.
I completely agree. And actually, just touching on the people who live alone who are working in education, actually in our island context, I don't know about you, but I have a lot of colleagues who have come from the UK, come to Guernsey, or in your case, Jersey, to work. And so the majority of their family is in the UK, but they are living on their own in Guernsey or Jersey. And as such, they feel really isolated. I've got a couple of friends at work whose families had not been able to come over for Christmas when they normally would have, and things like that. So that degree of isolation, particularly in education, has been felt, certainly, I think.
Certainly, yes. I mean, we've got a number of colleagues who are struggling with precisely that. And I think it was one of our MPs, but they're not MPs here. Of course, they're States Assemblies ministers. But they were referring yesterday to a comment that a doctor made to them about just the sheer volume of people who have been to their doctors to report stress. It's an epidemic of stress that people are feeling. So I think there's a compounding of various factors within people's personal lives, people suffering from grief as well, because we can't underestimate the fact that that has happened to people. And that, as you put so clearly earlier, the impacting of your professional and personal life, but you know, that there's no gap, is there? You can't separate the two out. And I think that that has created a real issue for the profession, and I think one that we will be dealing with for a number of years.
I think you're right. Even outside of a global pandemic situation, things that I never thought I'd say on a podcast, by the way, but even outside of the situation we find ourselves in, the teaching role brings a lot of challenges with it that someone perhaps working in the corporate sector wouldn't be familiar with. I remember I've been teaching now for about 12 years, and I came from corporate world. I was a director of a trust company, and I made the dramatic move from that job to teaching. I know, what possessed me? No, in all seriousness, best move I ever made. I absolutely love what I do. But the transition from corporate to teaching was phenomenal, and it was the biggest shock of my life. And I think one of the big things that shocked me the most was actually just working to a timetable, when previously I'd been able to kind of come and go as I pleased. Working to a timetable was a bit of a shocker. But even, like I said, even when there's no global pandemic, the teaching role brings some unique challenges that can impact well-being. We've talked a bit about boundaries, but what are some of the other things that are unique about the teaching role in terms of challenges?
Well, I think the teaching role, as I said before, it will exponentially fill all available time. One of the great things about working in an office or, you know, with another kind of job is firstly, you're not facing people all the time. You're not constantly presenting. And that means that you can go in, and if you're not 100% yourself, you don't have to be. It's fine. You can hide behind your computer and you don't have to engage with other people. And I think that that's the first challenge that teachers face is this, you're constantly on show. And I remember when I first started teaching, I used to get home and I would never want to answer the phone. For years, I never wanted to answer the phone. And I couldn't grasp why. My husband used to get really annoyed about it. But I think it was just simply because I didn't have anything left of myself to give to anyone else. And I think that that's really common with teachers, because they are on show all the time. The other aspect that is unique to teaching is the accountability that we face constantly. And those accountability measures have become increasingly pressured. And for many teachers that have been in the profession for a long time, but even for new teachers, those demands can be draining when you're constantly having to prove data, or you're constantly being observed or put under pressure to change your teaching styles. That's quite challenging. I am actually in charge of, one of the things I do is teaching and learning in my school. And I think one of the key things that we've seen, particularly in schools over, I would say, the last 15 years or so, particularly as accountability measures have gone up, things like Ofsted, for example, have increased that pressure. And it's a pressure that we don't feel as much within the Channel Islands, because we're not subject to the same scrutiny. Just, I should add that. But certainly within the UK, that toxic leadership that accompanies that pressure, where people are put under extreme pressure because they're not meeting the demands of the school isn't making improvements, or a particular area isn't making improvements. And that puts a lot of pressure on teachers as well. So, I mean, I think it's no surprise that the largest demographic leaving teaching at the moment is women in their 30s. And that has been fairly consistent. And it's because I think, you know, it's become the kind of job that if you're young and you have no other demands on your life, no other responsibilities, it's a job you can fully give yourself to. But the minute that another pressure comes into your life, something else that's going to take you away from your teaching, you don't have that capacity. It's all consuming, is the point.
Yeah, absolutely. There's a couple of things there that I wanted to pick up on, actually, Palm, that you said. The first was the pressure of, for example, the Ofsted effect, which is something I'm uniquely positioned to observe this, actually, because Guernsey schools and colleges are now under the Ofsted framework. I don't know if you're aware of that. It's quite a recent thing. I think it was 2019. Towards the end of 2019, it was agreed. However, we've not been inspected because of COVID travel restrictions. So lots of schools and colleges on the island now are working towards being Ofsted ready. So lots of professional development going on. So it's been very interesting to observe the effect of that and the language around teaching and learning, some changes that I've seen.
I wonder how has that impacted on a profession that's already challenged, because, you know, to have that in the background of this must be really challenging.
Absolutely. So I'm kind of keeping one eye on what's going on in the UK and one eye on what's happening in Guernsey, because I really don't want it to be the sort of thing that makes our teachers leave. You know, it would be absolutely terrible. I'm lucky I work for a fantastic organisation that are very mindful of the fact that it is bringing additional pressure, this accountability that you speak of. But it's quite fascinating to be part of it. The other thing that I was going to say is what you said about always being on when you've got sort of a high teaching workload, you're constantly on. I so relate to that so much. when I had a far higher teaching timetable than I do, I'm in a different type of role now, but I can remember just coming home on a Friday after work and just the weekend was just about doing really quiet stuff, you know, just not really wanting to talk to anybody or anything like that. So really related to that, certainly related to not wanting to make phone calls and things like that, definitely. I think that because teachers are always, I don't want to say centre of attention because that's not what I would define a fantastic teaching session as, but I think because we are leading teaching and learning in our classrooms, we do put ourselves under a huge amount of pressure and our standards are high. And you mentioned this earlier. And I'm reminded of a very early podcast episode that I did very, very early in the teaching space about how one thing that we can do is look at ways to just drop our standards a tiny, tiny little bit so that nobody notices. But we actually, our well-being is increased as a result. Isn't that a scary prospect, the idea of dropping your standards a little bit? What do you think about that?
Do you know what? I absolutely couldn't agree more. And the reason it's funny because when I went back after I had my children, I went back full time. So I had my, my eldest is 15 now, but when I was many years ago, I was a head of department and I decided to go back full time. I went back when she was 6 months, I think, but I recognized my limitations. I recognized that I couldn't do everything because there just wasn't enough space in the day to do everything. And I've accepted that I cannot be perfect. I can't be a perfect mum. I can't be a perfect teacher. I just can't be all of those things at the same time. It's virtually impossible. There aren't enough hours in the day. And you're right, Martine, the acceptance of that we are human is really important. Mm.
I have a phrase that I repeat to myself on a regular basis when the perfectionist Martine is taking over, and it's this: it is B plus work is okay. And that's a bit controversial for a teacher, right? But
yes.
But you know what? It is. B plus work is okay.
It is, absolutely. It is, and we've got to accept that. We've got to accept that we can't live to somebody else's standards because we're constantly measuring ourselves against what other people tell us we should be doing or telling us how we should be. And we've got to create our own standards. I think that's important, because as long as you're happy and as long as you can look yourself in the mirror each day and know that you are giving your best, that's all that matters.
That's exactly right. Now, when we had our pre-interview chat, we had a nice discussion around presenteeism, and I'd quite like to elaborate on that in this chat, if that's okay with you. So if you'd be happy just to talk a bit around what presenteeism is and why is it happening, that would be great.
Right. Presenteeism, if you're not familiar with the term, is the idea of having to always be present to show that you are working. And it's one of the issues, I think, that's endemic in schools and in corporate organizations as well, actually, I will hasten to add, simply because it's that idea that if you're not there working until, you know, not early in the morning and you're not late at night and not leaving at 6, 7 o'clock or whatever, you're clearly not working hard. And people can pick holes in you and what you're doing as a teacher for that reason. And I really struggle with that. And I struggle with it for two reasons. First of all, it isn't accurate. People work in many, many different ways, and we juggle the way that we work. I'm a mum, and for me, I would prefer to go home and feed my family and engage with them for a few hours before I pick up my computer again and start working. And that works for me. And I think sometimes that it's missed that gap, that where teachers work outside school, it's not visible. And that's the issue I have with presenteeism, is that it's often, we have to be seen to be working, which isn't, you know, it's not right. I mean, at the end of the day, we are professionals, right? We're trained.
Absolutely.
And we should be treated and trusted to be professionals and manage our work. And there are schools where this kind of, you think, you left at 3:30. Why did you do that? And there's questions about it. And I find it really challenging, because it's about trust and trusting teachers to do an effective job and trusting them to be professional. The other reason I struggle with it is because I think it affects women in particular. Mm. Because for women, they are often the ones who are the main carers. And often they will be the second salary, not always. I certainly wasn't. I was the breadwinner in my household for a number of years. But for most women, they will be the second earner. So therefore, their roles aren't seen to be as important. And I do sometimes think that people view teaching as, you know, oh, you finish at 3:30, you have holidays. And so that perspective of people from outside the profession impacts on women as well. So women will often have to juggle childcare and juggle all the family arrangements, etc. And that then has an impact on their careers as well, because people perceive them as not being engaged, not working hard. You know, they're not there after school to do the late meetings or whatever, or they have to leave a meeting at a particular time. Forbid.
Shocker.
I know, shocker that they might actually have to leave a meeting that hasn't finished at 5 o'clock. it's just crazy to even imagine that. You know, first of all, that a meeting would go on for more than an hour. I mean, why? And secondly, that this could have a profound impact on your career, because a lot of those discussions, a lot of those, they call it the old boys network, don't they? But it isn't always old boys, but it is that network of people that are in school later, and they tend to, you know, network, and they tend to get on. And those that leave early, the mums, and I say it's mums because I think it disproportionately affects women in this respect, they miss out on that networking.
Mm.
And so when those jobs come up, those opportunities come up for them to seek promotion, firstly, they're seen as slackers because they're not in late. And secondly, they're not part of that network. They haven't managed to get their name out in the same way. They're not friends with that group of people. And so it affects their professional development as well. So no, presenteeism to me, it's a big no. And we need more trust in the profession.
It's a huge problem. And I think everyone listening to this episode will be familiar with exactly what you're talking about. It strikes me that there was a couple of things that you said. I'll just pull out a few words. One of them was trust. One of them was professionalism. It strikes me that there's a cultural shift that needs to happen, and it's got to come from leadership. I hate to say it. I don't want to be the person pinning everything on senior leaders, but it's got to come from leadership that a culture of flexibility and professional respect is at the heart of what teachers do. I don't know what your views on that are.
I think that's wholeheartedly agree with that. Mary Meyer, who is a brilliant educationalist, she wrote a book called High Challenge, Low Threat. And it's my mantra in terms of how I view leadership, because I think we do need to be held to account. You know, we've talked about accountability being a negative thing. It isn't. It's actually there to benefit the pupils. And ultimately, we are there to serve the students who come to our school. That is what we do. And if we don't hold teachers to account, then they fall through the gaps and we don't get the progress that we need to get. However, it can be done in such a way as to challenge teachers, but also to trust them. That is crucial. And leaders, I think leadership is changing. There is no doubt about it. Leadership is changing within teaching. I'm doing a master's at the moment on educational leadership. And it's one of the things that we looked at within the first module was the changing shift in how leadership is perceived and leadership styles. And what we're seeing is this move away from that role of the charismatic leader, the hero head, which we often talk about, you know, the one person who is there pushing it. And often that style of leadership can lead to those sorts of impacts on teacher wellbeing that we've discussed, because they want us to make progress really quickly. They want us to change culture. They want us to do everything by yesterday. And that isn't conducive to well-being. But there's been a shift away from that to more distributed leadership and to more authentic and servant leadership. And these ideas of being human, of acknowledging that we are people, we're working together, we want to create trust within our environment, are gaining currency. Equally, the ACSL, the union, teaching union for school leaders, produced an ethical leadership document last year, I think, to 2019 they produced that. And it was all about leading ethically. And part of that is being aware of workload, being aware of the pressures that we are putting on our colleagues, and the impact that they may have in the long term. So I think there are changes there, Marty, and I don't want to be too glum about it, because I think things are moving in the right direction for sure.
It's time for a quick ad break. If you've been listening to the podcast for a while, you will know I love Notion for project management, writing, collecting resources, tracking my reading. It's basically my second brain. If you want to up your Notion game, I highly recommend Marie Poulin's Notion Mastery course. Find out more at theteachingspace.com/Notion course. It's interesting what you said about the more sort of traditional heroic leader. And it's certainly when that is the situation, it sort of perpetuates a culture of there's only one way to do things. But actually, when a leader comes in wanting to distribute some of the leadership and also has a more flexible approach to things, then there can be a shift. And you've reminded me, this is a side note, but my master's that I'm working on at the moment is also in educational leadership. So we do need to nerd out about this stuff sometime soon. that could be a whole other podcast episode, right?
Definitely.
But I think you're right. I think a change is coming. And I just wonder if the fact that, not that I'm wanting to put a positive spin on a global pandemic or anything like that, but the fact that we have had to work more flexibly because of COVID, maybe that can start some sort of shift to acknowledging that not everybody works in the same way and people do have different routines, and that's okay. You can still be a highly skilled, highly professional individual regardless of the work pattern that you have.
I really hope so, because I mean, we've seen those shifts already. Moving to virtual meetings, for example, can have a big impact. You know, I listen to meetings in my car on my way home because I have a 20-minute commute across the island, which for some people will be...
That's tough.
I know, it will be a dream, but for islanders, you'll understand how extreme that is. But that sort of shift, that a simple shift like that, parents' evenings, for example, being virtual now as well, these little shifts can make a big difference. And I do hope that there are, in fact, I know that there will be positives that will come out of this pandemic, and we've got to cling to those.
I think online meetings in many ways are a very positive change, although I would kind of caveat that with the sort of Zoom fatigue scenario from a well-being perspective. I started doing so many meetings online, I had no idea that that was a thing. But actually, you do need to be aware of not booking yourself up with too many online meetings, because it's exhausting. And certainly teaching via a screen is exhausting as well, way more exhausting than in real life, face to face. Remember when we used to do that?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, well, we're still doing it in Jersey, I will say. But you're right, because you can switch off for a moment or two. And I think one of the things with the screen is that you have to overemphasize yourself. You're performing, but because it's such a small window, it's almost like you have to overemphasize everything, and it takes a lot out of you. And I remember back in the first lockdown, I was doing three lessons a week. And those three lessons a week, as in, you know, the rest of the time the students were working on things and I was presenting live for a lesson a week for each one. So that was an hour. There was one day when I had 2 hours and it was exhausting. That was just 2 hours. Yeah. So the thought of, I mean, reading comments from people back in the UK where they are, the expectation is that they are remote teaching, live teaching every lesson is crazy. That's not considering their well-being at all.
Not at all, not at all. And it's a mistake, because it's just a big mistake, because asynchronous and synchronous online learning, they're two entirely different things, and each has a place. And to assume that teachers have to be live for learning to take place is just absolutely ludicrous. And like you say, it's not taking into account teacher well-being at all.
Or the research, because the research says that actually asynchronous learning can sometimes be better than live teaching. So, you know, the EEF, the Educational Endowment Foundation, put out a document last year, a rushed research document that they put together in about May, April time last year. Mm. And a lot of it was based on the only evidence that they had at the time, which was based on older learners rather than younger learners. But what they found was that ultimately, you know, where we can pace ourselves, where we can explain instructions clearly, so i.e. a recorded PowerPoint, for example, that can actually be more helpful to a student, because they can pause it, they can go back, they can look over it, than a live lesson where you're going at the kind of pace that you would ordinarily go at. And, you know, and I think that, yeah, we can't take into account that the research is saying that asynchronous works as well, if not better.
Definitely. So that is just that, and the Zoom situation is, they are just a couple of ways that we can consider our own well-being in the current climate, but also when at some point, hopefully, when we're not in the current climate, there are other ways as well that we can do things, practical, tangible things to prioritize and increase our own well-being. One more thing that occurred to me while you were talking, actually, was when you are on the receiving end of a Zoom either training session, say you're in some professional development, or you are in a meeting, it's okay to turn your screen off sometimes. I know some people hosting meetings aren't really keen on that, but for me, turning my screen off and just listening is, that makes me feel less fatigued in that situation. Yeah, so that's my top tip. Turn your screen off.
Because again, that takes that pressure away, doesn't it? It removes that spotlight on you.
Exactly.
That is exactly what it is. It's a spotlight, isn't it?
Definitely. Are there any other things that you think we can do to increase and ultimately prioritise our own well-being as teachers?
I think it's interesting. I was listening to one of your podcasts earlier with Chris Chamberlain from Guernsey Mind. And one of the things that he said was that we need to actively listen to each other. And one of the things that I don't think we do very well as a profession is listen. We're too busy chasing our own targets, if you like, and forgetting that we are individuals, that we are human. So, and I think that is crucial to effective leadership of schools, particularly at the moment. We have got to listen to each other. We have to listen to the stories that the people are telling us about their experiences through this pandemic. And as a result of that, I think, you know, it may be that we see some positive changes. I hope so. I really do. But I think that active listening is crucial. I mean, one thing that we haven't really discussed here so much is the impact that the teaching can have on your mental health. And I think sometimes it can become overwhelming. And I guess one of the things, I mean, personally, my experience was that when I was living in Guernsey, I felt the impact of the menopause at the same time as the increasing pressures of work, stepping up to leadership or attempting to step up to leadership, taking on more, taking on training, qualifications, for example, and juggling working, motherhood, all of those sorts of things. And we need to listen to ourselves, because I don't think I was very good at doing that back then. And didn't really listen to the signs of my body telling me that I wasn't coping. And I think part of that was I wasn't prepared to accept that I was failing as well. And I think that's something we're not, again, it goes back to that point you made earlier about being perfectionists. We don't want to admit that we're not getting it right, that we can't do it, that it's not within our capabilities. And I think that's something that we ought to be doing more of. So not only listening actively to each other, but listening actively to ourselves and our own bodies.
Well, that's such good advice. And Chris's interview, I enjoyed talking to Chris, because one of the things that he made me think about is that it's a strength to be able to talk about your mental health, and it's a strength to be able to identify when things aren't as they should be, and to have the agency to get some help. And he kind of pivoted that for me. I felt that was a really interesting way to look at things.
Yeah, I think the that idea of the resilience of talking about it, it can only come when there is a culture within a workplace, though, where you feel that is okay. And again, that links back to the things that we've been talking about earlier, you know, the idea of accountability, of pressures, of heads that might not be, or school leaders that might not be open to these ideas or openly, actively discussing these things. You know, you need to have a culture where people feel it's safe to talk about how they feel. And I still think there's some work to be done there within schools, because, yes, you're absolutely right. And Chris's words about having the agency to do that, there is real resilience in it. Because, I mean, if you've come through something like that and you have, you know, you've come out the other side, you are stronger and you are more capable, because you know that you've been through that and you know that you can get through it. And I think that also empowers you, because you have a message to share with others. And that's also really important, because then others can learn from you. And if you're talking about your experiences helps others to feel that they can cope, or they can go and talk to someone, then that's got to be a positive. So, yeah, I agree.
And if by talking about it, you can help just one person, then it's been worth talking about it. You know, I certainly, from my own experience, I'm quite open about the fact that I struggle with stress and anxiety. In fact, I recorded a podcast about it, and have in the past taken medication to help me. And I can remember having a conversation with somebody, a colleague who was also a friend, I would say, in the staff room. And I mentioned to him that I was taking medication to help with my stress, that it was an antidepressant. And he was shocked. He kind of went, I don't believe, what? Huh? Couldn't believe it, that somebody as seemingly bubbly and confident as me would need that extra support. And I was like, no, it's what I need, and it makes life a lot easier for me. And he couldn't quite believe it. And then he went away and thought about it, and it had quite an impact on him, and it started normalizing things for him. Yes. And he talks about, I've seen him now talk with his students about mental health in a totally different way. So even though it's a small conversation, I think that that conversation had quite a big impact on this particular person.
I couldn't agree more. I think that normalization of mental health, the more we openly talk about it, and people that are seen to be successful, seen to be coping, like you said, yeah, you know, you're bubbly, you're outgoing. How could you possibly need anything else? But it's a reminder that we are just human. And sometimes we need to reset. And that's all it is. It's just like hitting a reset button, isn't it? Having medication when you need it. I remember the discussion that I had when I was struggling, because I really struggled with that idea of taking medication, thinking that that was an acceptance that I'd failed and that I wasn't able to cope. You know, the minute I went onto medication, that was it. I wasn't able to cope. But the person, somebody spoke to me in the staff room, and they said, you wouldn't hesitate if you had something wrong with you. Let's say you've got a virus and you need to take antibiotics. You wouldn't hesitate to take them. So why would you pause and not want to take tablets for something where you've got an imbalance? And it was that kind of chemical medical explanation that really made me reflect and think, actually, yes, sometimes it's just like going to the doctors and getting medicine for something else. So why not?
And it's just
normalizing it. It's normalizing it and making it seem as though it's just something that we do. It's part of the process. You know, we really stigmatize mental health. Still, even though there's been great strides to change things, we still stigmatize the idea of medication. We stigmatize the impact that those people have. And I still think that there's still a legacy of that in terms of people's perceptions of how people can cope when they return after experiencing mental health problems. And that has got to change. It has to change because, as you know, you rightly said, we've got an epidemic of stress and anxiety at the moment as a result of this pandemic. We can't write everyone off, can we?
No. Goodness me, can you imagine? Blimey. I think there's been steps made in the right direction in terms of normalizing mental health and having those conversations, but we do still have a long way to go. And it's not enough to do tokenistic stuff like well-being policies and procedures and compulsory yoga that's not it's not what it's about.
Compulsory yoga. There are some really funny well-being ideas out there, you know, like there keeping are. You behind after school to do a well-being talk. It's just the funniest thing ever.
Oh, the irony of that. Mm. Oh, dear. We do have a way to go, but hopefully things are headed in the right direction. Oh, Palm, I could talk to you about this stuff for hours and hours and hours, but I'm conscious we're going to be running out of time soon. So what I am going to say is this. We've got a couple more questions to go, but let's carry on this conversation because I think it's really important. And, you know, anytime you want to come back on the show, you'd be very welcome.
Oh, thank you, Martin. That's really
my
kind.
My pleasure.
I'd love to.
Oh, excellent. Before we start to wrap things up, there's two things I'm going to ask you. I want you to tell me a bit about Women Ed and then tell us where people can find you online. But before we do that, is there anything you want to add before we go on to those questions?
No, I think we've kind of... I think I could talk about this for hours, but one thing that's really, really key is to remember the impact of COVID on teachers when we, in our day-to-day dealings with them, with each other, because I do think that the profession is buckling under the pressure of all the changes that have gone on, as well as all the negative press that we've suffered as well. That's had a serious detrimental effect on teacher morale. I expect that we will have huge numbers leaving the profession this year, huge numbers of leaders, school leaders will leave. And that's, you know, we've got a recruitment crisis within the profession already. So it's going to take a long time for us to work through the impact of this pandemic on the teaching profession. And the kinder we can be, the better, because it's going to help us to get through it.
I think that's excellent advice. And I think I would just add that we've got to stop using this phrase, the new normal. This isn't normal, the situation that we're in. It is not normal. Let's carry on remembering that. And as you say, be kind to ourselves. What a great way to leave that topic. Before we wrap up then, could you tell me a little bit about Women Ed? Because at the very start of the episode, you explained that you had a significant role in Women Ed. Tell us a bit about it in case anyone listening is interested in finding out more.
Sure. Women Ed is a not-for-profit organisation, and it was started up 2017, I think, was the starting date of it. And it was five key female leaders within the profession who got together over tea. It's just a lovely story, isn't it? Afternoon tea. I know, back in the day when you were allowed to do things
when
like that.
When we could.
And they basically realised that there wasn't any kind of network available for aspiring and current leaders, female leaders within education. And there was also this stark recognition that the bulk of head teachers within schools was male. And it was a shockingly high figure of, I think it's something like, I can't even remember what the figures were, but they were outrageous. Certainly something like about 80% of head teachers was male. That figure has changed over time, probably as a result of the work of Women Ed. And it fluctuates a little bit, but there is still a great deal of work to do. So I think that these women felt that there was a real need for women to be able to network with each other and to have that support network, because our experiences are so different. As we've already discussed in this mm-hmm. podcast, the pressures of womanhood, being a mother, of juggling the roles that we hold. And even today in 2021, the domestic role largely falls to women. So yeah, that's what the network was set up for. And now we have over 36,000 followers on Twitter. We have more than 30 networks in over 20 countries. Wow. It's grown exponentially in that time. And it's a privilege, it's absolute privilege to work with the community and help others to achieve their goals in leadership. I set up the Women of Jersey network when I moved over to Jersey 2.5 years ago, and we've had a network here since 2019. Guernsey was set up earlier mm-hmm. this year, wasn't it? So those networks are out there. If you are interested in finding out more, we run events. We have a website where we promote research that is related to the issues that we campaign on. And one of our current campaigns we have four current campaigns. One is flexible working. One is about the gender pay gap and addressing that. The others are about diversity and representation and increasing diversity and representation beyond just women, but actually other groups as well. So, yeah, lots of great campaigns that we're involved in. We have real impact. I would say we have real impact, and a global organization that you can get involved with.
Amazing. And if people want to find out more, should they just go to the website? Is that the best thing to do?
Yeah, you can go to womened.org. That's the website. Or you can go to the Twitter feed if you're on Twitter, at womened. And there is a network. There's bound to be a network near you that you can get involved with. So, yeah, follow those tweets. And DM me directly. I'm at Palm Plummer on Twitter. So that's a good way to connect if you are interested in finding out more.
Amazing. I shall make sure there are links in the show notes to all of that information so people can easily find you, find Women Ed, and find out anything that we've talked about in this particular episode. Palm, it's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much for coming on the show. I hope you'll come on again and we can continue to nerd out about all things leadership and management and other stuff about wellbeing off air. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you. It's been an absolute pleasure, and take care, Martin.
Thank you for listening to the Teaching Space podcast. You can find the show notes for this episode at theteachingspace.com.